The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
The people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Don't buy anything based solely on tip or recommendation you hear. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast, episode 448. On today's podcast, Lincoln Moore, Executive Director of Dekel Oil, that's DKL, talks about their impressive 2016 quarter one production update. Also on the podcast, chartist Zach Meir charts the following stocks: Drax, Dekel Oil, Metminco, Extract Resources, Glenwick, AsiaMet, Sirica Energy, Buckley Energia, Bass Resources, and Coos. Plus, I have market analyst with SpreadX, Connor Campbell, talks about Cable, FTSE, Drax, Dow, and Brexit.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Executive Director of Dekel Oil, Lincoln Moore. That's ticker DKL. Lincoln, thanks for coming back on.
Thank you for having me, Justin.
Now, I'm just reading through your Q1 production update, and I can't find one negative thing in it. It looks good, doesn't it?
Very, very good. I guess there's a few aspects of the announcement to go through. We've been pleasantly surprised, to be honest. We would have been happy for 11,000 to 12,000 tonnes of crude palm oil, so to produce over 15,000 tonnes and then have the flow through that, of course, you're producing more palm kernel oil and kernel cake is a great result, really, really much higher than we had anticipated and also higher than what the market had anticipated as well.
Yeah, well, let's give people the full story here. So people who don't know anything about Dekel Oil, summarise it, please, Lincoln. What do you do?
Justin, we're a palm oil producer in Cote d'Ivoire. We have a mill, which is one of the largest mills in West Africa, capable of producing up to 70,000 tonnes of crude palm oil. Last year, 2015, we produced roughly half of that, about 35,000 tonnes, and was our first year of profitability. So we're in a year now where we're looking to ramp it up further, and obviously the first quarter results show that's clearly taking place, with results up about 56%. The majority of our feedstock for the mill comes from thousands of smallholders, which we have relationships with. And in addition to that, we have 2,000 hectares of our own estates, which have just entered maturity. So we're in that part of the business cycle where we've gone through what people call the riskier stage, and now we're in the profit growth cycle.
Yeah, now this update, the first one, is this quarter particularly busy, or has it just been a good quarter? Because I'm looking here, it's been a 56.4% like-for-like increase in production compared with Q1 2015. So is this going to be a consistent increase, or is it just a sort of one-off quarter that's quite positive?
Yeah, I mean, like for like, I guess, reflects that it's not a one-off. It's compared to the exact same conditions as the prior year. It's important to note that the first half of the year is the high season, which traditionally runs from March through to June. So we only captured 1 month of that in the first quarter. So we expect really, really good production through April, May, June as well. Typically, you produce around 65% of your product in the first 6 months and 35% in the last 6 months.
Okay, all right. And so go through some other points here, Lincoln, that you'd like to highlight, because I've got a few written down here, but what would you like to highlight here?
We've spoken about production. I think we went through a year last year. People can look through our previous announcement where we've gone through consistent growth, and for the growth to be 56% from a much higher base at the end of last year is an enormous story for us. It's the first quarter of palm kernel oil production and kernel cake production. So we're going to benefit from the production and profitability of those two items this year, which, the plant was only operational for the kernel palm oil and the kernel cake from November last year. So, after sort of 2 or 3 months of that operating, those operations have stabilised and are going extremely well. Production is one thing, but obviously the most important thing is, are you making money? The business, as I said last year, had an EBITDA positive result. I think we'll have our final results out in the next 2 to 3 weeks, but a very good result last year, and we're looking to grow considerably this year. I think if you point to Cantor's forecast, we're looking at 80% growth in EBITDA this year, and certainly even a lot higher at net profit after tax. Because, of course, people have been following us for a while will see that we've made some big inroads in terms of changing our finance terms around. So it's all starting to flow through to profitability and positive cash flow through the 6 months of this year. And you know, we've always said that we'd have a look at the situation of the company around June, July. And we talked about a few factors in terms of whether we could get to dividend by the end of the year. But the main things were, you know, production was continuing to grow. We're operating in a better palm oil price environment. And we've got the majority of our refinance out the way. So, you know, we're still looking very good to be in a position to assess things around mid-year, whether a dividend is possible at the end of the year.
Okay, well, we can see, you know, production has increased, and obviously it's a good thing. But if the product you're selling is going down in price, then it's not so much a good thing. You're fighting against the tide a bit. But it's that's not the case, is it, here? Your price has gone up, hasn't it?
The price of crude palm oil has generally moved up over the last 3 months, and actually quite a lot specifically in the last 3 to 4 weeks. What investors will need to understand with our sales is the price that we sell the product, and then also the price we pay for the fresh fruit bunch, is based on the previous month's average. So the pricing that we're selling through in March will look slightly below the international price. But importantly for investors, the price that we're paying for the fruit as well is a lot lower as well. So the actual gross margin has been a lot higher in particularly February and March as the price of palm oil has increased. Now we expect that to be to continue. We had at the end of the quarter around about 3,000 to 4,000 tonnes of crude palm oil on hand, which we'll be selling into the April and possibly even into the May pricing, which is certainly a lot higher than March, so which is the price which we actually paid for the fruit. So the margin should technically actually improve even further. So it's always a very nice time for us when the palm price is increasing, because we've locked in the price of the fruit the previous month and selling into a higher price environment the next month.
Well, do you know, last time you were on, we were looking at the chart and you were trading in a range, and the price was having a bit of difficulty breaking out of the range. And I'm pleased to say, at the top of the range really was spiking it by 1.3. And I'm pleased to say it has broken out now. And it's almost trading in a new range. I mean, the market is down today, markedly down. I mean, the FTSE is down by, you know, over 1.4%. The AIM is down by over half of 1%. So you're against the tide. And I think if today would have been a positive market generally, you'd have been flying today. But I think there's an opportunity for investors, because I think the share price has been held back a bit by general market sentiment. So it's going, the share price is going in the right way, isn't it?
Yeah, this is our third pricing upgrade by Cantor's this year, I think. So it's a very positive trend. I wouldn't think there'd be too many companies that had three pricing upgrades in this market in such a short space of time. And, you know, we're confident that we have other areas where we can improve the business and further price upgrades to come. So you know, as you said, we spoke a few weeks ago. We were trading around 1.2. We're now trading really solidly around 1.45. And we still think there's still very, very good news and positive share price movement to come.
Marvellous. Well, listen, I mean, it's been, you know, if you're listening to this and you don't know about Decalol, read the update today. It's very positive, but and we've gone through some of it there. But if you need further convincing, Lincoln, if you could give us, you know, an investor, potential investor, three reasons to put Decalol on their watch list.
Well, the investors taking advantage of buying into a company which is growing. We, you know, we've seen production grow again this quarter. It's been a consistent trend for us for the last 18 months. So they're buying into a growing company, and as production grows and we're producing more production over a fixed cost base, and of course that's improving our profitability. And the supportive palm oil price coming back up again is obviously adding also to our gross margins. So it really is an interesting time for investors to get involved. And as we aim obviously to be at the end of the year a dividend producer, we think that we've got a couple of value unlocks to come.
Exactly. Marvellous. Well, Lincoln, thanks for coming back on. And when you have further news, and I expect it'll be more positive news, please come back on the podcast.
Well, very good, Justin. Absolutely.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast now is the charting living legend. And I say living because he is. He's living and breathing right now, Zach Mir.
just for the time being. I don't know if I can make it up to my 50th birthday, which is in September, but, you know, who cares? Live fast, die middle-aged.
Yeah, I see you're putting an early plug in for that, hoping for a couple of...
I'm going to do what I'm doing on my 50th, what I did on New Year's Eve.
Nothing.
Exactly.
Yeah, I know. Well, you know, I think everyone will be celebrating charts around the world, the charts of Zach Mir.
Well, no, that's right. New Year's Eve, I was there looking at my charts. I think that's it. What else can you do in life? I mean, there's nothing better than that, really.
When you've got a passion, you know, it doesn't stop for just that one day in the calendar that means pretty much nothing, does it? Let's be honest. The passion burns on, you know? It's there. So, anyway, Zach, let's have... in fact, I'll put you on the spot here. What do you think of the main indices there, of the big stocks, the FTSE 100? I don't know if you've looked at it at all. The UK X, but I mean, it's been bouncing around, isn't it? The 6,000, 6,200, back down to 6,000, back up to 6,000. And it's like, what's going to happen here? Are we going lower or are we going higher?
Well, this sounds like a sort of quiz show or something. What was that one? What was that? The price is
higher
or
lower? Higher, lower? Yeah. Come on, Zach, what do you think? Higher or lower? That's what it should be.
I'm going for low. I mean, it's a bit easier now because it's, you know, as we are speaking at the moment, the DAX has gone through the floor. And also, the FTSE's broken the recent 6,100 range. So I think we're going a bit lower, even if we don't have the sort of the big meltdown that we had in January. But I think we are going lower. It's just easier to go with that at this stage. And obviously, if the FTSE did break 6,200 again, then you would go for the higher scenario. But at the moment, it looks... Oil is down as well, that doesn't look like it's going to be very good over the course of April, at least until the Doha meeting on the 17th. So I think a bit lower.
Okay, yeah, and of course we've got a summer of uncertainty, haven't we? And I'm not talking about the weather as normal in the UK. We've got the Brexit, and now there's rumours about the Grexit, again. So that's not good, is it?
Well, the Brexit thing I think is going to happen because people are too chicken. To leave, even if they should, they're too chicken. A bit like the Scots, they were too chicken to leave as well. Sorry to upset 5 million people, but I think it was a very similar type of thing.
Yeah.
And I think that just for the sake of money, I don't think you should just do things for the sake of money. I think there's a principle. You should vote on principle, not on just a few hundred quid in the bank. And I think that's people, but people are not going to do that.
Yeah, but the thing is, you've got all these big industries, who have European arms everywhere, emailing their employees in the UK saying, Brexit would be very bad for us and bad for you. So there's people there who take them a wage, paying their mortgage and their bills, thinking, well, I don't want to upset that. So, like I said, even if it's long term benefit.
We don't even know that. No. We don't even know that Britain leaves the EU and it becomes the new Switzerland. And it's just, it becomes a sort of a massively booming economy. We don't even know that. So I think it's a principle of whether you're pro-Europe or anti-Europe, and that's what you should go by. But obviously, people are not normally that brave. That's the problem.
Yeah.
Hence Project Fear.
Yeah, exactly. Well, it's stepping into the abyss a little bit because no one actually knows what's going on. And when people are uncertain, they go with what they're familiar with. And at the moment...
Well, my final point on the issue is that Britain was the greatest country in the world by a mile when it was not in Europe until, in the 18th and 19th centuries. So there we go.
Yeah, okay. Well, I'll leave it at that, even though,
You can't follow that one.
No, I can't really. But we've moved on a little bit since then, I suppose. Things have changed a little bit, haven't they? But anyway, listen, let's look at some stocks and charts rather than talk about politics and nonsense. So you've got a list of stocks there, Zach. Kick it off. What are you looking at?
Well, let's start with the ones that were requested.
Yep.
Drax, which has started to... It's actually, if you look at the chart, I was expecting a car crash, but in fact, it's the opposite. It's actually building very nicely. I think what you look at the chart here, the daily chart here, you look at July support, which was around 250, and then the sort of November to February support towards £2, and then the higher low since then. And even better if you're a fan of the 200-day moving average. Since the beginning of last month, we've recovered the 200-day line and found support above it. So this looks like one of those oil tanker type turnarounds, a slow turnaround. And slow turnarounds are normally the best type of turnaround.
Yeah, it does, doesn't it? If you look at the moving averages, a lovely, you know, organised Boeing coming down and coming back up, like you say, in 20 days across the 200-day now. Yeah, it's looking nice there. That's looking promising.
So on that basis, I'd probably say while above the 200-day average, which I have at 262, we could hit as high as £4, which would be the May, May last year levels, which I suppose, you know, which would be a great upside from here. And I suppose time frame sort of 2-3 months, something like that. So looks. I think the only thing there is a timing rather than actual, you know, the shares getting back up there. Because as I said, the long turnaround should eventually take the stock there, and you're risking what, 20-30p to try and make £1.20, £1.40, something like that.
Nice. Okay, what's the next one?
Next one is Decal Oil.
Yeah. Well, on the podcast today.
Good friend Lincoln Moore, who's a great guy.
Yeah,
And I know the company very well. I know that Myton and Gervais Williams have invested in this, so he's a great fund manager as well. So that's very good. I think the palm oil is all over the place. Is coming out. Well, I don't know where it comes out of. Presumably a tree.
Yeah.
Or and then a factory, but the palm oil is flowing.
I'd take him out of the palm tree. I'm just guessing there.
This is very, very complicated. I think that's one of the issues, actually. Ironically. People don't. If it was, I don't know. If it was apple juice, I think people would be. You know, the company would be. You know, the shares would be double or triple the value. But I think people just not quite sure about the Ivory Coast, not quite sure about what palm oil is used for, demand, etc.
Yeah.
I think that's been a little bit of a problem. Not a problem anymore.
Well, listen. Lincoln's on the podcast. He explains all. But also, people don't know where baby oil comes from. But people buy that.
Yes, they do, probably from palm oil as well, who knows.
Yeah.
But this is a beautiful chart, I think it's one of those, also another slow burn, very slow burn situations. We've got the base in place here since, July 2014, you know, 0.9 pence, tested that many times since, and the latest price action, which is from the second half of last month till now, I think is a V-shaped bull flag, which is a formation which is of my possibly my own invention and own imagination as well. But V-shaped bull flag resistance, obviously at the 150, 1.5 pence level. But I think that's just a matter of time before that breaks, probably in the next week or two. Overall trajectory here, drawing a line from 2014 through the early highs of that year up to 2.2 pence.
While
we hold above 1.5.
Yeah, and you know, fundamentally going great guns, up production almost like year on year by 56% in this quarter, and the price they're getting for their oil is improving as well. So that's good. Okay, what's the next one then, Zach?
Met Minco, looking a bit sorry for itself at the moment. Basically, we sort of peaked out 0.3 pence again as we did in October. I would be using the 200-day moving average of 0.2 pence as a sort of line in the sand, which is relatively easy to do at the moment because it's very close to where the shares are now. Want to see a weekly close back above 0.2 pence to get back on the bullish tack here, but I don't think the shares are going to go back below 0.15 anyway, so hopefully that will be the limit of the downside. But if you're a buyer, probably wait for, you know, that weekly close above the 200-day line.
Yeah, okay. And the next...
Extract Resources.
XTR, right.
Which has been a long, long story.
Yeah.
From a charting perspective, I've got the shares in a broadening triangle from July last year. So you draw a line through from the August lows through December through to where we are now, which goes down to 0.15. And then a line through July and September resistance towards 0.38. Obviously, 0.38 is a long way away, and people will be praying and dreaming of that level. Probably the best way forward here is to wait for the 50-day average at 0.19 to break versus where we are at the moment. I don't know if you've got the RSI indicator on your screen.
Yes, I have. It's about 41, is it, for that? Or?
But you can see a little sort of little V-shape, a little kink in the RSI for the start of April. That is normally a local buy signal. So if you're a fan of the shares, that should be enough to take it up from here. Obviously, stop losses below 0.15, that's not sort of rocket science. But I think that the value I can add here is that I would say that the next time it breaks 0.19, I would expect it to have a bit, a bit of a decent move, if only towards 0.25, 0.3 pence.
Yeah, and where it is now, like that point 0.15 is quite a strong support level, isn't it? Because even if you look back, when was that? Back at, was it the 1st of the 12th, I think it was, that, in 2015, it had resistance there. Then when it broke through that, came back to that level at support there, and we've had to test that again more recently. So it seems like we're now at a key support level, isn't it?
I think it's key. The other thing is to say about that August support line, which has been multi-tested through November, December, and then now, that's, you know, that's a lot of support there. So hopefully, you know, that will come through. I think the only problem here is more the timing, that this could go on for months in this sort of slow sliding action that we've seen, and that would ruin my, you know, well, not say my bullish idea, but the bullish sort of idea behind this.
Okay, and yes,
couple of arguments.
Yeah. What's the next one, Zach?
Glenwick, Gwick.
Yeah, Gwick. It's a big fan of these. A lot of fans of this on the, I say, a cash out at the moment, looking to waiting for the news. Really, I keep getting people saying get, you know, Karen Pierce on the podcast, and I have approached you. You welcome the podcast, but when there's, you know, material news, and that hasn't been forthcoming, so it's just bouncing around, isn't it, really?
We should just come in and have a chat, maybe talk about Brexit or something.
But
basically, very messy. I mean, there's not much I can add here. It looks to me as though the shares are in a converging triangle from, you know, if you draw us a line of support from November, that goes through 0.12. Line of resistance goes through 0.16 from December. So really, you're waiting for 0.16 to break, and I would probably do that on the basis that, you know, so there's no position really at the moment. Wait for 0.16 to break, and hopefully from that breaking, there would be momentum to, you know, to the upside from that point. But a sort of a neutral stance there, very much, and that goes along with what you're saying.
Marvellous. All right, and what else you got on the list?
Well, a stock which I'd love to take, love to sort of like have a lap of honour on, taking all the credit for, but I'm sure I would get some hate mail from people who would disagree with me and say that they found it first. Asiamet Resources, the Manini play.
Yeah, well, I've got to say, you know, he's on the podcast tomorrow because they've had the PEA out, and it's been doing well recently. I hold stock in this company, and I bought in around about a penny, I think, or just a little bit above that. So I'm sitting pretty. But of course, it started up today and went up, and all of a sudden came down because there's cracking figures that came out from this PE. But I think now people are saying, what about funding? Because, you know, so there's a bit of, or it's that thing, isn't it? Rising, you know, on rumour and selling on fact, or, you know, that kind of thing, you know?
Well, I think what's interesting here, the what I was saying, I think a couple of, well, maybe just yesterday, actually, but it was, I was looking for 6p, which obviously was hit. Yesterday, I was looking for 6p, which was hit within 24 hours. The point number one, which is sort of a line of resistance I'd drawn from March. Second point was that the 10-day moving average, which is now 3.4 pence, roughly, was coming in support all the way up through from, you know, early March, which was amazing, really, that it was, the shares were remaining above that. Ideally, see the shares close above 3.4 pence today, and then, you know, we head back up higher again. But I have to admit, the candle so far today looks like one which will take a few days to recover from. But at the same time, I think while this is above, let's say, 2.5 pence, which is the 20-day average, I would still be a buyer on dips rather than anything else. So
yeah.
I think that's, well, so that's sort of, that's the way I'd be looking for. So I think there's only any sort of, like, you really start sweating here, really, if we go back below, let's say, 2.5.
Yeah, well, I did buy some today. I put a limit order in at 3.25, and it filled that. And so I bought a little bit more because I think, you know.
So I think that's fair. But as I said, around 2.5 pence is probably the most you would like to see it retrace. I think after hitting 6p, I think that would be more than enough. In fact, I suppose we've actually just had a 50% retracement so far today.
Yeah, well, there we are.
Good old Fibonacci's.
Yep, I know him well. Okay, anything else you want to look at?
Okay, Barclay Energia, because I think they're slightly Spanish, or they're based in Spain.
Say that again, Zach. That was very nice of you to say that. Like that.
Barclay Energia. Yeah,
nice.
Well, there we are. Yes, I'm supposed to be familiar with Spanish, but that's about as far as it goes. The whole price action here, I like. It's been a slow burn situation. The shares have been above their 200-day moving average since June last year, which is always good news, and generally above the 50-day line for most of that period as well, which is at 24.14. Rising trend channel from June as well, level with the 50-day line at support. So you basically, while the shares are above 24 pence and the 50-day line, I'm looking for a higher a move to the upside, which would be as high as 35 pence, which is the top of a rising that trend channel from last year. And that's something which I suggested to the CEO when I met him a few weeks ago.
All right, yes. Well, hopefully that could be coming on the podcast soon. And like I say, that is a nice upward trend, isn't it? You know,
Yes, it is a nice trend. And I think I was sort of read there's a sort of a uranium shortage, and they've got that big sort of resource there. So all looks good as far as the fundamentals are concerned on that. It's just, you know, just the time. I suppose it's just the slowness of the situation that some people. Private investors are very, very, very impatient, aren't they?
Yeah, and that's the thing, I think. You know, it's like, you know, some of the best investors in the world, like, you know, Warren Buffett, he'll sit and hold for a long time. And I've seen, do you know what? A good example is Metal Tiger. I've held them for quite a while now. At the start of the week, I think I still am, run about 500% up. And people kept saying, well, sell, because I de-risked anyway. And I thought, well, no, I'm just going to hold on. It's a long-term story for me, you know. And I think sometimes we're all too quick to take a small profit. And, the good returns come from big profits, long-term holding, I think, you know. So, anyway, that's my 2 pence worth. Anything else there, Zach?
Yeah, just a couple more before we head off for the sunset. Mm-hmm. Serica Energy.
Yeah. SQZ.
SQZ. I like this because, in fact, the day that I told, I think Mr. Atherley, that I thought that Barclay Energia was going to go up, somebody sort of tapped me on the shoulder and said, "You should have a look at Serica Energy. I think that's, you know, it's ready for a bounce, you know."
Yeah.
And he was absolutely right. Yeah. I don't know who he is, but he was absolutely right. It was around 10p then. It's 11.3 pence roughly at the moment. Rising trend channel from September. And I think that while it's above 10, it could get up to 16. So I like the risk, sort of the risk reward on that.
Yeah, it's almost like that big rise happened, you know, in was it last year? Was it September? 10th. Yeah, and it came up, then came back down, and almost that previous sort of resistance. See, before that spike, it was it came back that little bit, didn't it? And then it's gone back.
That's very healthy that he just found support at old resistance. Very healthy also that. On the pullback, it never went below the 200-day moving average. It's a very, very important. That's just like with Barclay, good sort of little trick there to see whether the shares come back to the 200-day line. Normally they do,
and you
buy at the 200-day line. But if they remain above it, it's usually a very, very strong situation technically. So that is looking good at the moment.
Okay, and any more for any more?
The last one. A stock which looked like it was, it had a lot of fans going into the autumn last year, and you'd sort of, you know, looking for support to come in at a penny and then head higher. I think it did that a few times. But then in November, December, January, the bottom fell out and we headed sharply lower. But it looks as though the company may be back in business, or at least the shares may be back in business. I suppose the way to play this is to look for an initial target at the 50-day average of 0.53. If you're lucky enough to be sort of in at the lower levels, otherwise wait for a clearance of the 50-day average, maybe a weekly close above it, and then decide whether you want to try and run the shares back up to a penny.
Okay, one question. What is the company?
Vast Resources.
Oh,
sorry,
right. Yes. Okay.
I'm forgetting the wonders of... of the podcast, I sort of think I'm on Tip TV or something.
Yeah, Vast is out of hammering because of this, because their funding issue with Creed Capital, of course, and they keep selling into the market. But they've halted or cancelled the second tranche of that, and so this has given them a bit of relief, and they've shot up there. So, that's it. Do you know what?
I should do like guess the stock in future.
Yeah. Do you know what? In fact, this morning I put rises today before the market opened. I said Asia Met. Vast and Couves. I mean, AsiaMet went up the start. Vast went up massively, vastly. And Couves, which is KOOV, which I hold, came out with a trading update, and they've broken 10 million this year, and they've a market cap of 7 million, you know. And it's basically an Indian ASOS, the most successful stock of all time, ASOS name, casino. And the top three people in this company were at ASOS when they were, you know, doing well. And if you look at the website, it's exactly the same as ASOS. And ASOS are not in India. And this company is. And I think, well, if ASOS wanted a presence in India, all they'd do is buy this company. Because same management, same brand, pretty much, apart from the name of it. That's it, you know?
Well, it looks... I think you can see that the way that... I'm looking at the chart now. This is definitely of Coops, not an imaginary stock that I made up. 18 pence was the high in January... twice on the rebound, and today we gapped through that resistance, which is a very strong signal. We already broke the 50-day average a week or two ago, mm-hmm. as you can see there, which is normally the beginning of the end of a bear run. And while above 18, I'm looking for back to sort of 30-35 pence. So
nice.
Hopefully, if it gets there, Justin, you can buy me a pint.
I certainly will. Nice, clean, healthy pint of water. All right, Zach, lovely fella, thanks for that, and speak next week.
Thanks, Justin.
Lovely. So anything happening, Zach? Anything of
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waits.
And joining me right now on the podcast is market analyst with Spreadex, and that's Connor Campbell. You all right, fella?
I'm very good, thank you.
Yeah, I'm not too bad. Now, you know, we're also sensing this Brexit, and it's looming bigger, isn't it, and bigger towards us. And as yet, like I think you mentioned last time, that, you know, it's not fully at the forefront of our minds yet, but it will be. And when we see it on the 6 o'clock news every night, I suppose then we'll see the growing uncertainty. But as far as, you know, clients of Spreadex are concerned, what's sort of three areas to look out for?
Well, since you bring up the Brexit, we'll talk about cable first, I guess. Obviously, the Brexit, cable is the instrument that has felt the most impact by, you know, any time a new poll comes out about the Brexit, any time any information that might suggest which way the public are leaning towards the Leave or Remain side, the pound normally, you know, takes a hit or gets the boost. Recently, you know, I think even it's hard for the pound at the moment because it's sort of damned if it does it and it's damned if it doesn't. If news comes out saying how bad a Brexit would be, you know, it falls. Even if a poll comes out saying that the Remain campaign is leading in the polls, normally they're saying how close a race it's going to be, so the pound takes a fall then as well. Mm. It's any of its rebounds as well normally are to do with, especially in cable, dollar strength rather than pound strength. It's sort of its underlying weakness that is often exploited by the pound. And we saw that last week, strong wage growth in the non-farm jobs report in the US, saw the dollar gain some ground back against the pound. This week, I think, in focus is going to be the Fed meeting minutes on Wednesday. There seems to be growing discord between a fairly dovish Janet Yellen and the rest of her committee. So whether if the meeting minutes suggest, you know, growing discord in the Fed, some kind of timetable for a rate hike, because that is the other major thing for cable. On the British side, you've got the Brexit. On the US side, you've got, you know, the constant question of when are the Fed going to raise rates again. Is it going to be June? Is it going to be July? I think they're the two most likely dates at the moment. So that's sort of causing the fluctuations we're seeing at the moment, and, you know, on a day-to-day basis, the battles we're seeing in that currency pairing. Going forward, you've got inflation in a few weeks' time for both the UK and the US. Obviously, especially for the US, inflation is normally directly linked to how the Fed are going to react, you know, going forwards. Then looking towards the end of the month, you've then got the Fed statement. I don't think anyone's really expecting the central bank to raise rates this month, but investors obviously are always, you know, clamoring for some kind of hint of what way Yellen and Co are pointing, whether it's going to be a June or July rate hike, whether it's going to be further down the line in terms of this year. So largely, our clients seem keen to keep cable between around 1.42 and 1.43. Whenever it starts to tick higher to 1.43, we're seeing, you know, waves of sellers come in. But whenever it's ticking towards 1.42, we are seeing buyers propping it up at that price.
Yeah, I'm just looking at the chart now. And it, I mean, at the start of March, it sort of dipped down, didn't it, to 1.38, and then it had a sort of a violent bounce back up above 1.4 there. And you're right.
Yeah, it's seeing a lot of volatility at the moment, and that can normally be attributed to, you know, the odd release that points in the direction of a rate hike or not a rate hike in the US. And then you'll get polls coming out. I think last week, a poll in the Observer, you know, I think the Leave campaign was leading by 4 points, but then saying how, if the Remain campaign can energise young voters who seem to be pointing towards voting to remain in the EU, they will be able to gain the ground back. I think it's, at the moment, it's the uncertainty. And what, the thing is, even as we get close to the referendum and some kind of definitive front runner might start to appear, the uncertainty of just that vote being closer is going to cause some headaches for the pound going forwards. It's just a rather unpleasant time to be the pound. And, you know, best-case scenario, things cool down in the second half of the year. Worst-case scenario, obviously, who knows what happens if we do vote to leave.
Yeah, you've got to be pretty brave in these markets to go either way, I suppose. But, I mean, that's, you know, volatility is what a good trader's like, though, isn't it?
I think so. And I think we've seen clients, whilst, you know, you would think at the moment it's safer in the long run to sell the pound just in case, because it looks like it is going to tick lower as the referendum comes closer, there are, you know, little snapshots where our clients can make a profit.
Yeah.
You know, if it's buying the pound ahead of the non-farm job support, in case you think the figures are going to point towards delaying a rate hike in the from the Fed, there are nuggets and time periods where this volatility, be it the pound going up or down, can help our traders, you know,
Make
some short-term profit.
Go on, I'm just looking at the, you know, pound versus the dollar there, and that spike down it had to start in March. And I think, wasn't that when Boris joined the Leave campaign, I think it was it?
Well, that was at the end of February. That's been probably the biggest movement for the pound so far this year. It was like the Boris bomb at the end of February announcing he was backing the Brexit. I think that really put the cat among the pigeons in those maybe holding on to some of their positions in the pound.
Well, I'm looking at a chart there on a weekly chart, and you know, last time it was down that level, it was in the start of 2009, you know, after the financial crash. So you can see
exactly
that worrying times, you know.
Exactly, it shows how important this the Brexit issue is.
Yeah,
that it sent the pound so low. Obviously, there's been other issues in the last year and a half that have helped take it to that level, and the rate hike obviously from the Fed last December put it on its way. But the Brexit, at least in the first half of the year, it seems like it's going to be one of, if not the defining, you know, news story for at the very least the pound, but, you know, potentially the wider markets as we approach the end of June.
Yeah, because there's some you know, whisperings now coming out in the press saying that, you know, if Britain does withdraw from the Eurozone, and that questions the whole Euro, you know, zone project, really, because we are, you know, like I said, top five, top six biggest economies in the world. And for us to pull out completely of the Euro questions the whole project, doesn't it? So it's a bigger issue, I think, than just about Britain, isn't it? So that's the worrying thing.
Of course, it's about the precedent it sets of, well, if Britain can leave, well, then why can't X, Y, or Z leave? Even if Britain stays, it questions the precedent, because if Britain stays and it has got, you know, special considerations, why can't X, Y, and Z have special considerations? And it does start to, you know, slowly chip away at the underlying foundation of the entire region in terms of being, you know, an equal and joint collaboration between countries if certain countries are given more consideration than others.
That's it. And also, I don't know if you've been hearing this, there are whispers about, obviously, Greece now having the issues about, you know, refinancing and all that around at the same time. So that's compounding the issue we had. So we've got the Brexit and potentially Grexit, which may not happen, but it's, you know, it's the brinkmanship there again we may see. So that's a bit worrying, isn't it? You know?
Greece is I think, you know, Greece was obviously such a hot issue around this time last year and, you know, over summer. And I don't think the markets would react too well if Greece does really come to the fore again, because that was such a nightmare during, you know, June and July, and the, you know, the endless meetings between the Euro group and the endless volatility that it induced. I think that if a Greek default happened around the same time as the Brexit referendum, I think you could see the kind of volatility that opened the start of 2016 and see some fairly ugly declines. But again, like you said, it's all hearsay at the moment, and it depends.
Yeah.
You know, the fact that it's come out now might deter that situation from happening compared to if those, you know, if the supposed comments from the IMF about surrounding Greece and, you know, trying to push it towards a default, you know, as it discusses the bailout, the fact that news has come out might deter that kind of action going forward.
So I know that, I mean, the two other areas you want to look at, I suppose, are linked, aren't they? The FTSE and the Dow. I mean, so, you know, what are we looking at here?
If we look at the FTSE first, well, throughout March, the FTSE could not have, you know, it sort of just you know, trudged along. You know, March presented the markets with plenty of things to chew on. There, you know, Fed comments, ECB meetings, you know, you name it, there was plenty of stuff going on. Yet the FTSE couldn't escape this bracket between 6,100 and 6,200. You know, it dip its head above the parapet of the upper level, dip its toes below that bottom level, couldn't ever really break out of it. Even today, it's fallen and it's, you know, dipped below 6,100. But the big question, I think, in April is, will the FTSE be able to see some kind of breakout either side of that bracket, be it pushing above 6,200 and hitting fresh 2016 highs, or falling below 6,100 and seeing the kind of lows it saw in January and February? The issue is for the FTSE, whilst in Europe and the Eurozone, there are always questions over what will the ECB do to inject, you know, how much stimulus are they going to inject? And you're just dealing with more countries, so there's, you can gain a better sense of direction from, you know, a wave of financial data coming out of six countries. It sort of points to some kind of trend. And over in the US, you've got the perpetual question over when and how much are the Fed going to raise rates. With the UK, the FTSE is lacking that same kind of macro direction. As we were saying, it's got the Brexit, but the Brexit has largely been driving currency movements rather than movements in the FTSE. This week, it looks like that trend isn't going to change. There's very little for it to play with. I think Friday sees manufacturing and industrial production figures. I think the manufacturing production figure is expected to tick into negative territory, which isn't a good sign for the FTSE anyway. Earnings-wise, there's also not a lot for the FTSE to play with. I think Thursday sees Marks and Spencer's, which is likely going to be the biggest release for the FTSE this week. And that probably won't be too pleasant either, considering, I think, clothing sales are expected to fall once again. Looking ahead, though, in April, there are some chunkier bits of data that might help suggest some kind of direction for the FTSE. You've got Chinese GDP data, which might sound disconnected, but given how heavily weighted the FTSE is with its commodity stocks and how precarious the situation with China's economy is, any significant movement in the Chinese GDP data and the country's industrial production data might have, you know, cause ramifications for its oil and mining stocks, which then obviously is the thing driving the FTSE's slightly larger fluctuations at the moment.
Yeah, you know what, so looking at the FTSE there, it's almost like, you know, you could have, it's a range for a while, a range bound. It's almost like you could as soon as it hits 6,200, you can sell, you know, pretty much. And when it gets down to about 60, 50, you can start buying again. It's just going up and down between that range, isn't it?
It is interesting, and that range has been reflected by our clients. Even before, in times of uncertainty, we've seen, you know, clients erring one side or another towards buy or sell. At the moment, though, and it's been the case throughout March and since April began, our clients are really split down the middle between buying and selling within that range. It is just ping-ponging between 6,100 and 6,200. And it needs something to break it out of that, some kind of bigger piece of news. And it just seems to be lacking that at the moment. I've seen people say that the FTSE perhaps is a more accurate reflection of where we are in the global economy at the moment than the Dow Jones, which has seen an incredible recovery since its February lows. I think it's grown over 2,000 points in that period, which is huge compared to even in the Eurozone. The indices have been fairly stagnant. Like the DAX has spent most of its time dancing around 10,000 without seeing a significant drive above that, whereas the Dow was astonishingly outperformed the rest of the world without anything to necessarily back it up. You know, Janet Yellen's dovishness, you know, is enough for a short-term boost, but the Fed, you know, do seem fairly confident they're going to raise rates this year, which, you know, isn't good news for the Dow Jones. However, again, big question this April, whilst the question for the FTSE is, can it just break out of that, you know, fairly drab trading bracket, the big question is for the Dow, can it push on to hit effective all-time highs? It's not, today it's fallen back a bit and it's closer to 17,600, but already this month it's touched 17,800 for the first time this year. That really isn't far away from, you know, the very significant 18,000 level, and there's still plenty of the month left for it to push on to those highs. I think it will. Whether it can do so is really going to be dependent on the Fed. As I was mentioning about when we were talking about cable, there's a Fed statement this month, the Fed meeting minutes on Wednesday. Those, like, if you take those as the bookends of April, in between you've got US GDP, US inflation, things like that, it does seem to be the two bookends, be it the Fed meeting minutes and the Fed statement, are going to be what potentially seals the deal for the Dow in terms of reaching 18,000, or if it prevents it from reaching that level, dependent on what kind of tone the Fed can strike.
Yeah, okay, marvellous. So if we're looking at significant dates for you now and the end of the month, were you put, so you mentioned two there, so when are they again, sorry?
You've got, I think the Fed statement is at the very end of the month in the final week of April, and then you've got the Fed meeting minutes this Wednesday, I think 7 o'clock UK time.
Okay.
Obviously, the Fed meeting minutes, people know what the Fed said before, but it's just a case of, you know, trawling through to see what the individual members of the central bank said to see what kind of way that it's going to be leaning when it comes to that statement at the end of the month.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, lovely stuff. Connor from Spreadex there. Thanks very much. Speak soon, fella.
Thanks very much.
That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Don't forget, get involved in this week's oil price sweepstake. Go to voxmarkets.co.uk/OPS. Make a guess of what you think Brent crude will be at midday on Friday. You've got to make that guess before Thursday, 4:30. And if you're spot on, you'll win a rollover. It says $81-ish. Plus whatever it is on Friday. So it'll be about, what, under 30 that? Over $100, $110, round about that. And don't forget, if you haven't got the Vox Markets app, you're missing out on essential information. Go to voxmarkets.co.uk/app. Thanks for listening. Speak tomorrow. Much appreciated.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
The people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Don't buy anything based solely on tip or recommendation you hear. Please do your own research.